your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
David Britton.
From the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Very dramatic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for the introduction.
Oh, anytime. Actually, what about every other Tuesday? How does that sound?
They're pretty good.
Okay, good.
This one stands out for me so far.
What's going on up top, mate?
Up top?
Up top.
Well, way out top. There's a neutron star that's been found that is on the brink of not existing.
Oh.
So let's sort of backtrack a long way from there. A neutron star. A neutron star is a star bigger than our sun that has run out of fuel. And when stars run out of fuel, gravity causes them to collapse. Gravity is always there. Our sun only stays big because it's hot, and the radiation pushes out and overcomes gravity, so you have a large star. Once you don't have that heat, then gravity takes over. So a neutron star is a star bigger than our sun. Our sun won't become a neutron star. It's not big enough to collapse that much. Bigger than our star, that has collapsed. When it does, it squeezes the atoms together so much that electrons go right next to the protons, if you think of it that way, which of course can't happen, and so they become neutrons. And so basically you have this neutron soup. It's like a ginormous nuclear core, if you like. To give you an idea of what we're talking about, when I say ginormous, it's actually extremely small. So a neutron star is somewhere around, say, two times the mass of our sun, squeezed down to something the size smaller than Auckland.
Whoa.
Mm.
Okay, so
that's
about
crazy.
19 or 20 kilometers in diameter. So you take something that's twice as much stuff as the sun has and squeeze it down. If you took a sugar cube of the neutron star material, it would weigh about 100 million tons or 100 billion kilograms.
I can't wait.
Okay, about
that
the same
much,
as
David.
The entire human population.
Wow. So is this particular neutron star, they've discovered two neutron stars which have crashed into each other?
No, this is a single neutron star, but it's the largest one they've found. It's 2.17 times or thereabouts the mass of the sun. So it's on the brink of the theoretical limit of how big a neutron star can be. If you keep on pouring stuff onto this neutron star, it gets heavier and heavier. And eventually, gravity will overcome even the force that holds neutrons, keeps them at their integrity. So it would collapse into a black hole.
Okay. And what does it? What does it mean? Is this like
what does it mean?
What's the great thing about having discovered this particular neutron star? Does it have something to do with us being able to figure out how fast the universe is expanding thanks to the whatever it's emitting?
Oh man, you are deep.
I think you've probably gone one step too far. Not the beginning of the universe, but certainly what neutron stars are made of exactly. I mean, they know this much, but there's so much more that needs to be found. It also will lead to an idea and information about space-time itself. I mean, the way they discovered this is this neutron star has another star orbiting it. It's got a companion, a white dwarf. So our sun will become a white dwarf star when it runs out of fuel. It's a compact star like our sun, shrunk down to the size of the Earth. Okay, so nowhere near as dense as a neutron star. And it just so happens this white dwarf star is going around the neutron star in line of sight of Earth. So it goes in front of the neutron star, and the neutron star goes in front of the other star. So they eclipse each other. And neutron stars, they spin very fast. Okay, they were really huge. They become extremely small.
Nobody's fault.
And the spins in them doesn't go away. The spin stays the same, like an ice skater spinning around. So this pulsar spins hundreds of times each second. And as it does, it's got a beam of radiation, including light, like a lighthouse. And as that goes around, we can see that, we'll detect it. And so when the other star is going around it, it changes the amount of time it takes for that light to get to us.
Mm.
And so they're able to figure out the mass of the white dwarf star, and by knowing the mass of one of them, they're able to use that to find the mass of the neutron star. Yeah, so they're going to look at... they found this accidentally, actually. Well, not the star itself, but this fact about it is what they found accidentally. They're looking at hundreds of these millisecond pulsars for another reason entirely. And just because this one lined up with its companion star, they discovered all this other stuff as well.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah. Now, relations between the US and Russia have been a bit tense recently with this hole appearing in the International Space Station and whose fault it was, and the Russians are not going to come clean on...
That's weird.
No. It was actually in August, the end of August last year, that there was a slow drop in cabin pressure on the space station, and a hole was found in the Russian spacecraft that was attached to the space station. Now, that had been there for a while, so it didn't seem as if it had come up with the hole unless it had been plugged and the plug had come out or something like that. Then there were these things, you know, maybe it was someone on board who was trying to sabotage things or whatever. Anyway, the Russians agreed to, try and sort it out. Well, now they've come out and said, yes, we know what's happened, but we're not going to tell anyone the results of their investigation, including NASA.
And it kind of looks like someone's drilled a hole in it by accident and then bogged it up, hoped it was going to... The repair was going to hold tight, but and then it's disintegrated while it's been up in space.
We're going to need more hubba bubba.
Well, we're not even sure that it was bogged. I mean, it could have been, the hole could have been blocked accidentally or, incidentally, and that might have come with... But you can certainly see where a drill is bounced next to where the hole is.
Oh, yes. Man. So do you reckon it happened on the ground or up in the...
Yeah. Well, that's one theory, that it happened on the ground.
It must
and
have
they
been. A little tech. Imagine your first day on the job, eh? Just fuck that. Oh, man, we have to replace that whole wall. I think I'll just... I think I'd tell everyone. That's crazy that no one told
exactly,
him.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, Bridenstine, the head of NASA, he said, I don't want to let one item set our relationship back, but it is clearly not acceptable that there are holes in the International Space Station. Now, I think it's rather diplomatic.
Is that an easy fix? Do they just put a patch over it and carry on?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Presumably, they've done a more long-term patch since that happened. Well, I think that spacecraft will have returned to Russia by now.
Okay. Now, the Russians actually accused the Americans of sabotage when this news story first broke. Does that make relations a bit icy between the two of them?
Well, as I said, NASA's trying to be diplomatic now, so, yeah. I mean, NASA has to be, because that's the only way they can get to the space station until they've got the Boeing and SpaceX craft up and running and they can take their own crew up.
Mm. They're just like, be cool.
Yeah, so they don't want to upset the Russians.
How much longer is the space station going to be in operation for? Has it got a limited lifespan?
Well, yeah, it does. But at the moment, I think the contract goes to something like 2024. And I think the NASA is actually working towards handing it over to private concerns, piece by piece. But it's a pretty complex procedure because, I mean, the Russians and other countries are involved. It's not just Russia and NASA.
Now, David, what on earth is the night sky doing here in New Zealand?
The night sky.
It doesn't really make too much sense.
Well, after sunset, I'd be looking west for the next few days. Firstly, way low down after sunset, Venus and Mercury are getting higher each night.
What's
if you're lucky enough to live out to the west, maybe out like Piha, we can see the western horizon over the Tasman Sea, there's a comet. That may be visible. Now, comets are notoriously fickle. Sometimes they're bright, sometimes they're not. This one isn't particularly bright, but it could brighten. You just never know. So if people are looking out in that direction, wait till the sun's gone down, maybe half an hour after the sun's gone down. It's very low down, only a few degrees above the horizon. So you should see Venus nearest the horizon, Mercury above that. This is looking almost due west, okay? Now, just beside Mercury to the right is where the comet will be tonight, and then it'll go below Mercury tomorrow, above Venus on the 3rd and on the 4th will be below Venus. So that comet is travelling really fast towards the Sun, and it's going to go around the Sun. Obviously near the Sun we have no chance of seeing it. But it might get brighter. The other thing to look out for is a very skinny moon, nice crescent moon out, out there getting higher, going the opposite direction each night. And on Thursday, it'll be 2 degrees from Jupiter. So a few opportunities for some photographers to get in there as well.
I was actually out in Pihar on the weekend, and I was looking up at the sky, as you do, having a bit of a moment. And there was a really, really bright, really, really bright star. What one was that?
Very, very low down.
Relatively low down.
That's probably Venus.
Yeah, it's ripping. It's so bright at the moment.
Yep, Venus is always bright.
Shit, it was humming.
What you wouldn't have noticed, because you weren't looking for it, in fact, above that is Mercury.
Well, I was a little bit... I was having a big night as well, so...
Yeah, Mercury is much smaller and fainter.
Okay.
But it is there. Binoculars would obviously help. Mm. It also helped to find the comet.
Damn it, there were some binocs there. I didn't even get them out. I should have had a home.
Yeah, I mean, Jupiter and Saturn are up higher, and Scorpio circles. In the morning, there's Orion and the Pleiades almost due north. So if you're up in the morning, there's some nice bits of sky to look at there as well.
Nice. Now, what's happening at the Stardome? Because it is school holidays.
It is school holidays. Day two is finished. Well, what we have on the website is says toasting marshmallows and cozying up under blankets around the campfire for some stellar stargazing. Mm. So, yeah, the campfire, by the campfire, is what this is about. So looking up at the sky at night, what can you see? How can you see what is up there better? How do you know what you're looking at? So there's a whole bunch of activities and demos that begin the session. There are three sessions each day, 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 2 o'clock. From there, there's rocket launching out in the park and then going into the planetarium to see a show called Spring Stories in the Sky. So these are stories about some of the myths and legends connected with the constellations that are out there at the moment and over the coming months, the whole of spring. You can also learn how to spot certain stars, you know, the names of the brightest stars, where the planets are and so on, so that you can go out and identify all those for yourself. So those are three sessions each day through the whole holidays. Children 3 to 16 years of age is $12, and for the parents it's $10 per person.
It's a bargain.
At 4 o'clock
after
the holiday program, there's another show called Looking Up.
Oh, we struck another one of Johnny's bargains.
Looking Up is a children's planetarium show about the night sky. So that's at 4 o'clock, so that's a bit under an hour. Okay, that's separate from the holiday program itself, which is an hour and a half, and that has activities as well. So the 4 o'clock is just a planetarium show, but that's the new one for children called Looking Up.
Massive fan of activities, actually. I do like a good activity from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is good.
Just a very quick update on our large telescope, the ZEISS, which has been out of action for about a year now. Total upgrade, automating it and so on. We thought it was just about ready for the public, but unfortunately a part sent from the United States was not the right one, and that's delaying everything. So they're taking the opportunity to upgrade all the flooring and the panels in the dome and make the whole dome interior look much better. So, it'll be probably another month or so before the telescope's going to be available.
When you say it's brand new, is it like a second-hand telescope, though, you've got from somewhere else? That's pretty much brand new.
Making the interior of the dome look brand new.
Okay, but the telescope itself, is that like a brand new thing, or do you get like a hand-me-down from another place? Because I can imagine it's not the type of thing you'd ever throw away.
No, the ZEISS telescope was installed in 1967.
Oh, my God.
It's a communist telescope. It came from East Germany at the time.
Okay.
So we've had it for, 52 years?
Sick, and it's still
so it was all
ass.
Manual.
Okay.
And what we've done is
you've retrofitted upgraded, like a motor.
So it's all computer controlled.
Got you. Cool. Nice one. I like it.
Yeah. So no hands-on. You just go tap on a keyboard.
Type in the coordinates, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Mean.
Yep.
All right, David, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Head along to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium this school holidays.
Yep, and I think I'll be talking to you next week.
That's right.
Fantastic, mate.
Look forward to it.
Bye.
Cheers, bud.
Bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.